Good morning. It's time for another conversation. This is High Desert Dialogue, conversations with Regina and Roxanne, here on Talk 960. We're keeping it local with High Desert issues, events, and interesting people. You can hear us Saturdays at 9 a.m. and Sundays at 8 a.m. on Talk 960 and talk960.com. Let's start talking.
Well, good morning, Roxanne. How are you?
Good morning, Regina. So good to be here once again with everybody.
I know. And Roxanne, you know what? I am really excited because at the beginning of the year, we talked about wanting to do some things kind of different, bring on some new and fresh topics, and explore them maybe in a little different way than we have over the previous year, right?
Right.
And this show that we're getting ready to do is really going to be a three-parter.
Yeah, so I hope you can tune in for all of them.
For all three. This conversation is really something that I'm excited to be able to do. And it really centers on why it's important to discuss healthy masculinity, especially in relation to emotional well-being, right? This is a little something different for us. So like I said, I hope our listeners will stay with us through all three parts of the series because there's really some great information, and I think they're going to be inspired by what they hear. This is really focused on men. I know we do a lot around women,
but
it's really focused on men.
We've been highlighting our men this year, so that's
great. And so if you're a male listener, this show is for you. It's for the men that you know, your friends, your brothers, sons, etc. And then for our women, it's for the men that are in our lives, right?
To support them, yes.
Yeah, to support them. And then, you know, whether you're male or female, your emotional and mental health is really important, right?
Mm-hmm.
So our guests today are Cindy Bostic, who is a certified grief and crisis counselor. Most of you will know her as the executive director of the Today's Woman Foundation. But Cindy does a lot of things, and all that she does extremely well. So we're happy to have Cindy with us for this series. And then this gentleman is actually the reason why we're doing this.
Yeah, and you've heard him before and a few weeks ago, so he's become a special guest for High Desert Dialogue,
yes.
Right?
And we've got Darren Paulson with us. Darren, as you know, is the general manager for the Victor Valley Wastewater Reclamation Authority. But today, he is with us in the capacity of an experienced, seasoned gentleman who has been through this quest for mental health and emotional well-being. And it's very personal. And I am just really honored, Darren, that you would take time to come and share with us. And I know you and I have had conversations. You've been very transparent, just very real. And so I think if our listeners will give us the opportunity to stay with us, I think that what they're going to hear and how they're going to walk away from this will be very powerful. So I want to thank the both of you for being here with us today. And we're going to dive in. You know, we often hear, I guess it's something that's considered an old script, right? That be tough, don't feel, don't cry. And I think, Cindy, kind of feel like that's killing men, right? That's not so helpful to have that mindset, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you look at just the suicide rate, 80% of suicides are committed or performed by men.
80%.
And it's all ranges of ages, too. It's not just the young men we're talking about, but maybe older men as well.
As a matter of fact, the greatest percentage of suicide is over 65 for men, believe it or not.
That's interesting.
Okay, I'm like blown away by that, right? Because I thought you were going to say something like 16.
No.
65.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
So, you know, it kind of tells us that there's something happening there, right? Because that's a specific generation of men. And that particular generation of men, I believe, has not been encouraged, was not raised up to be able to be in touch with, share, speak their truth.
That's
in
right.
terms of the challenges that they experience, the stress levels that they may be experiencing, the fears that they may have, right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And wasn't it like maybe taboo to talk about that kind of stuff where, you know, how they didn't want to be perceived as weak, right? Because now I think a little bit different in the younger generation. We do talk about, you know, mental health and there are resources available for people, but not, I think, so much in the older generation.
Oh, no.
Is that, would you say that's
very true?
Mm-hmm.
You
yeah.
know, that generation was brought up to believe, hey, you pull yourself together and keep stepping.
Right. So I want to ask you, Darren, because, you know, we
as
should go to the source.
As a man,
right? How does traditional masculinity shape the way men experience and also express stress?
Well, first off, Regina, I really want to say thank you to both you and mm-hmm. Roxanne for this opportunity. Right? You talked a little bit about my journey and some of the maturation and the journey to, you know, achieve kind of that self-awareness, and really is about talking. It's
mm-hmm.
talking about it. Right?
Yes.
I really want to, you know, thank you for, you know, introducing me to Cindy. We've had some really great conversations. Really looking forward to where this discussion goes today. So let's just dive into where Cindy left off. I'm really close to that demographic of being 65 years old. I'm 60 today, so.
Well, we wouldn't know
happy
that.
Happy birthday.
Whoa.
She's absolutely right. I'm definitely of that generation that grew up with a father and a grandfather from a masculine, you know, mentor.
Mm-hmm.
That's what was expected, right? You are not allowed to show emotions. You are not allowed to show stress. It was a sign of weakness.
Mm.
Absolutely was, you know, seen as a test of our endurance, right? It's something that we just have to go through. That's what
right.
we do. And I'm also one of those statistics that at age 18, I tried to commit suicide. So I understand the feeling of depression and stress and shame and guilt and all of those things that, you know, at the time were taboo. I wasn't supposed mm-hmm. to talk about those. When I first came home, I told my parents that the feelings that I was having, it was a shock to both my parents.
Right.
It's like, wow, you as a man, as a boy at the time, you know, were having those emotions. I didn't know that. Literally, I felt like I was sharing something with them that they thought was not even something that should have come out.
Mm-hmm. Right. Was it also associated with weakness?
Oh, absolutely.
Darren, was that a factor in there?
Yeah, I mean, we as men sometimes feel that by showing emotions, by being emotionally available, by, you know, having that outward expression of our true feelings, other men, you know, they look at us and think that we're weak. But ultimately, we're being visible and open about those kinds of feelings. So we as men don't want to be seen as weak. That's
right.
something that we hold very dear to us. And I'm hoping in our conversation that we can get to, you know, ultimately why I don't think it's a weakness.
Right.
That's where I want to go to with this.
Yes.
Today, really, truthfully.
Right. Yeah. And I promise you we will get there.
Absolutely. Let's
we
go.
Will absolutely get there. Talk to me a little bit about some of the hidden cost of managing stress silently, because what I hear you saying is on average that, you know, men hold on to, they don't express, they don't talk, they don't share, right? But that doesn't mean that they're not dealing with something. That doesn't mean that they're not holding on to something. So talk to me a little bit about the hidden cost of managing that stress and those things silently.
Now, even though I feel that I'm very self-aware and understanding of that, I'm still guilty of holding back.
Okay.
Right? But what I recognize, and it's very easy to see, and because I do know when it occurs and when I am holding back, the impacts of that, right? My wife is the first one to tell you, you know, how you feeling? And my answer is always, oh, I'm fine. She knows.
She knows.
Right?
You're not. Yes.
And I'm not.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So for me, right, it definitely leads to, you know, impacts on relationships,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely leads for me a feeling of isolation, right? If I am, if what I'm portraying out to the public is somebody's going to perceive it as weak, then I just avoid public, right? I just want to be by myself.
So you isolate.
I isolate.
And separate.
Uh-huh. Absolutely, yeah. I isolate, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've learned to use that as a tool to recover.
Okay.
But ultimately, my first instinct is to isolate, is to, you know, until I'm ready to share, I'm going to go find a corner and deal with it internally. And what I have learned, right, is that ultimately if the outcome of, if my desired outcome is to bring this forward, to resolve it, to make me feel better as a human being, the quicker I can get to sharing,
yes,
the quicker I feel better. My persona as a person, if I'm going to get through something, if ultimately man's goal is to get through this situation, the best me to be successful at getting through it isn't the person who's angry. It's not the person carrying around guilt or shame.
Right.
The best way to resolve is to be the best me. And I've learned that I have to get those emotions out before I can deal with the situation.
Right. Because internalizing those things, even though those are emotions, would you say that there is some impact to even our physical health and well-being, right? And particularly for men, right? That there's, you know, that brings on those heart attacks. That brings on that high blood pressure. That brings on stroke, if you will, right? So there is some impact, not just emotionally, which is hugely important, but also there's some impact to carrying that, right, to our physical health.
And I've experienced varying and different levels of physical impact. Right, when I was depressed when I was 18, I chose not to eat.
Ah, okay.
And I literally lost almost 30 or 40 pounds, an unhealthy level of loss, weight loss.
Okay.
After kind of initial overcomes, then I overate and gained a significant amount of weight.
Okay.
Right? I've experienced significant anxiety attacks where I've actually had to go to the hospital and felt maybe I was having a heart attack.
Okay.
And I wasn't.
Yeah.
Thankfully, with God's grace, I haven't had to endure a heart attack. Right?
Yes.
But, I mean, looking at my past, my father had his first heart attack when he was 48.
Mm.
Right? And when you think about the fact, and I look back on that man and the mentorship that he provided, looking at now, he was carrying a lot of stress. He was carrying a lot of depression that wasn't externalized, that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah.
Right?
That
materialized in a heart attack at 48 years old. Right?
Yeah.
It will kill you.
It will kill you.
You know, every cell in our body knows how we're feeling.
Absolutely.
Yes, and we need to make that connection, right? We need to make that connection. And it was something that you said about the eating disorder that you kind of developed because of that, right? I liken that to those who suffer with alcohol and substance abuse because they are suffering in silence, right? And so we always think like that's the extreme, but that starts from somewhere. And it quite often starts very small, right? So I'll just have a beer, and then, you know, I'll have two. You know, and if it numbs me from having to think about and face these things that are kind of got me in bondage, so to speak, then I'll have a third or I'll have a six-pack, right? And so we start to go down the rabbit hole. So I really appreciate that, Darren, because that's mindfulness, right? Being aware, right, of those things that can take us to places that we don't really want to go and they're not really necessarily healthy for us. With that, what are some healthy ways for men to recognize and manage stress? And this is huge, without shame or guilt.
No, those are key, right? Because you can't move past it if you're carrying the shame or guilt, right? For me, there were a couple of different things, right? It was definitely finding people who I felt safe with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of those people in my life was my mother, thankfully, who I could always open up with.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, too, my father, ultimately, as I got older and he matured, right?
Mm-hmm.
His heart attack at 48, prior to that, he was also probably an alcoholic in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, there was an awakening from my father who basically you know, learn to care and express feelings more.
I love
he could
that.
Tell me he loved me and you know, the alcoholism, you know, he didn't drink for years. And so, I mean, I was able to learn from my father's mistakes, too. And that was also a start in my life because at that time I was in my 20s, right? So it was great timing for my maturation and growth into a man and the man I wanted to be. Other things that I think were very helpful to me, physical exercise. Right?
Okay.
Whether it was going to the gym, really and truthfully, my most favorite thing of all was just to get on my bike and ride.
Yeah.
The wind in my face, my thoughts in my own head were, you know, working on affirmations to think positively rather than negatively.
Right.
Trying to change this reoccurring negative thoughts in my head. The best way to do it was when I was filled with endorphins from exercising, right?
Yes,
the feel-good feeling of getting out there in that wind and pike and cycling and, you know, I love myself. I'm a good person, right? God has good plans for me, right? All of those positive feelings, those affirmations during those times, I think, super helpful along with the ability to find, you know, other safe people to have these open discussions.
Right.
Which are not always easy to find.
But relationship.
Absolutely.
Right? Safe space relationships is important. Cindy, I'm gonna have you chime in here on that too, because I think you have maybe some suggestions, ideas about healthy ways for men
and
to.
Darren hit the nail on the head, starting with paying attention. Paying attention to how you're feeling.
Yes.
In every part of your being.
You
know, your physical being, your emotional, behavioral, and, you know, your thinking. And exercise.
Mm.
You know, exercise reduces the stress hormones. And it's really, really important.
And it's also seen as a very manly thing to do, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a guy is typically not going to go take a bubble bath.
Right.
You know? Or have a spa day.
Right.
You know, they've got to do what works. Hobbies, you know, what is it you enjoy doing?
Mm.
Darren talked about communicating, you know, with loved ones, family, friends, people who you trust. And knowing that, I'm thinking about the Serenity Prayer right now. You know, control what you can and let go of the rest. Recharge. What about, I have a question of you, Darren. Create a brotherhood. Is there a group of guys in your world who you maybe periodically connect with, you're able to be open with?
So in my life that has changed, right, over time, right?
Yeah.
When I was younger and my professional career allowed me to connect with other employees. My brother, who's the same age or, you know, close in age to me, we're very close. Early on in my life, you know, and once my father became more emotionally available, right, those men in my family became part of that. My brother was injured in a significant car accident. He's a traumatic brain injury. My father passed about the same time. And I lost that group, right? So I had to find a new group.
Yeah.
Right? And then in that particular time in my life, I've also progressed in my professional career as a manager. And sometimes as a manager, the loneliest job in the world is the manager.
Yeah.
Right? Simply because you can't necessarily make
great
emotional connections with staff.
True.
And, right? I mean, maybe really close peers in my organization.
Mm-hmm.
Really, when I saw that, I always knew that there's this need. Today, I would say my group is actually my small church group. I've got a number of men in that small church group. We're all about the same age. And our faith and some of the being able to share some of the hardships within my own church group. We've got a gentleman who's been, you know, overcoming alcoholism and depression. And, you know, when you're working with men who can be open and honest about their hardships and what they've overcome, now you just feel like you've got a group, you know, again, back that you can just be open with and you can not feel shame or guilt when you talk to that group.
Just be real.
It's real, and you've got to continually, as you mature and grow, your group
changes. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's for us all.
Because not everybody matures and grows
along
with you.
This is very true, too. Very true.
Yeah.
Darren, I would love to have you talk a little bit or share how you recognized the impact of the stigma of stress and how you overcame that stigma? Because I think that's important, too, to talk about.
You know, I think the best example of that is in my work environment. Right? Mm-hmm. Once I recognized very early, you know, what depression and stress and that looks like and feels like at a very young age in my life, right? Just as I'm becoming an adult, I think that for me, learning that young and recognizing that when I was in those and feeling those feelings, mm-hmm. that I didn't like the person who I was. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't being honest with myself, right? I wasn't the man, my best, you know, person that I can possibly be.
Right, best self, yeah.
And when it became very evident that that self that I wanted to be was seen negatively, was really seen in my professional career very early on.
Mm.
Because I was a very emotionally available leader, somebody who sought to have good working relationships and both at work and at home. My peers in the leadership world back in the, call it the 80s, 90s,
mm-hmm.
Really just looked at me and said, "Hey, you are a weak leader. Right? Mm. You're just weak. People are walking all over you, whether you know it." And I kind of had, you know, to do a little bit of self-evaluation and finally came back to them with responses of, "Okay, well, let's talk this through, right? As a leader today, you think I'm weak. Whose team is more productive?"
Right.
"My team. Whose team has less, you know, sick leave and on-the-job injuries? My team. So if you want to talk about which version of leadership and management, or man, let's just call it for that sake, is more positively impactful,
right?
My version,
right,
is more positively impactful.
Right.
And for me, right, that's really what drives me to continue this growth and maturation, because it's really about, you know, my purpose, right? I mean, thank you for giving me this opportunity,
yeah,
right? Because, again, this is growth for me. This, yes, is where I feel my best. I feel, yeah, I'm trying to tear up now thinking about this.
Well, you know what? You're helping to dismantle that mindset that we have of defining what a man is or what a man is supposed to be, because that's not like, you know, we're not cookie cutters,
no,
right? You know, and helping us to realize that there's a human being in there, male or female.
True.
Right? And so we come wired with these emotions, right, and feelings. We come with that. So how to best navigate that, evolve those things, develop, right, and find out, like you were saying, how we become our best self, right? Those things are important. I am just really, I mean, again, great conversation. Cindy, I don't know if you have any last comments to kind of chime in on what Darren has just said, but you know what? There's been such great information already shared. I'm like, wow.
Well, don't worry. We're not done yet, though.
Well, okay.
I want to add just one thing to what Darren was saying. You know, tools like empathy, caring, vulnerability, these traits are the most attractive to women.
Yes.
Guys don't usually get that, but we need people in our lives,
yes,
who are real.
Yes.
And there's nothing more attractive to me in a man than the openness, the vulnerability, you know, the willingness to shed a tear.
Right.
That's a real human being.
Right. The vulnerability to care.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
You know, when you see that there's somebody who cares, you know, one of the things that I love really about my husband is, you know, when he sees something, whether that's he sees a woman with a child going through a door and he goes to hold that door, right? Whether mm-hmm. he sees something across a parking lot, and it could be a young person, yeah, and he just is drawn to, you look like you were having trouble trying to change that tire or whatever.
That's right.
Those are things that just make me say, I chose right.
Yeah, he's got a good heart.
Yes, he's got a good heart.
Yes.
And attentive, you know, really present in the moment. So, yes, I want to thank the both of you. For this part of our conversation, I'm going to say to our listeners, Roxanne, please join us next week for part two, because we're going to take a deeper dive and discuss grief versus mourning.
Okay.
So you're not going to want to miss that. It's going to be an in-depth conversation on that topic. And thank you both again for being here. I'm excited about where we're going with this.
Thank you, Regina, for giving us the mic.
Thank you.
Thanks again for being a part of the conversation. Reach out to us and let us know what you want to talk about. Send us an email at RoxanneScafidi@edbroadcasters.com. High Desert Dialogue, Conversations with Regina and Roxanne. We'll talk to you next weekend.